turn around. All I hope's to come to be. And people gather around. They have all they can bring. And nobody went with that. I'll learn a song to sing. The revolution starts now.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Indie Media Live, one of the most progressive half hours on the radio, because we have no corporate sponsorship and we have no corporate control. Hope you'll stay tuned to hear what a difference that makes. I'm your host, Rebecca Ferris, and I'm here every Tuesday introducing you to people in our community who are passionately involved in the issues and causes that directly affect you and your family. We have an amazing show for you today. Virginians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty are in the house, and we're going to be talking specifically with the executive director, Steve Northup, and Jerry Givens, one of the board members. Before we jump into that, I want to remind you that you can always stream this or any of the other great programming on WRIR live 24/7 at WRIR.org. This show is going out live today and will be re-aired tomorrow on our live stream at 11:30 a.m. and 2:30 p.m. so you can listen to us over and over again. You want to be sure to mark your calendars for Saturday, September the 10th, because the Vegetarian Society of Richmond is sponsoring its monthly potluck on that day at the Friends Meeting House, 4500 Kensington Avenue. That's at the corner of Kensington and Commonwealth. 5 o'clock, there will be a potluck, and you're invited to bring a dish to share with everybody, preferably vegan, and your own place setting. And then at 6 o'clock, there will be a program by Carrie Hilliard, the executive director and founder of Ricky's Refuge. For those of you who are regular listeners to Indie Media Live, you know that Ricky's Refuge is the 367-acre, no-kill, all-species, peaceful sanctuary in Orange County. The refuge is home to over 1,200 animals of more than 20 different species. You can check them out at rickysrefuge.org. You can take the kids out there and have a great day. You can get involved in all kinds of volunteer positions out at Ricky's Refuge. And if you want more information about the potluck, 344-4356 or vsr.org. I wanted to bring everybody quickly up to date on North Anna, the reactors there that are 40 miles, give or take, as the crow flies from Richmond. They went through the earthquake with us a few weeks ago, and the NRC has released the information that the earthquake that we experienced, a 5.8, is greater magnitude than these reactors were designed to sustain. And in the same announcement, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission also reported that Fukushima in Japan was not expected to experience a tsunami higher than its seawall, except about once every 1,000 years. North Anna is not supposed to experience an earthquake larger than its capacity to withstand, except every 4,762 years. So do you think we're okay for the next 5,000 years? I want to now introduce you guys to my guests. I am honored to have back with me Steve Northup, the executive director of Virginians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty, and an attorney in his own right. Steve, thank you for being back here in the studio with us today.
Thanks for having me, Rebecca. It's always a pleasure to be here.
And you brought with you today Mr. Jerry Givens. Jerry is on your board of directors. Jerry, thank you for being here today.
And I thank you, Rebecca, for having me.
Thank you for coming out in all this rain, guys. We basically had to ford a stream to get here into the studio today, but I'm so glad you all were able to do that. I really appreciate it. Mr. Givens, I wanted to specifically introduce you a little bit more to our listeners by telling them that for the years between 1982 and 1999, you functioned as the Commonwealth of Virginia's chief executioner. You were one of the most prolific executioners in the nation during that period of time. 62 condemned men were put to death, making that about 11% of all those executed nationwide during those years. You have made a transition from the chief executioner to a tireless advocate for abolition of the death penalty in the Commonwealth. I'm wondering if you could tell our listeners your story. Tell us about that journey from executioner to abolitionist.
Yeah, that's true, Rebecca. Well, in 1982, like you said, I performed my first execution by a guy by the name of Frank Coppola. He was the first one within that 20-year period that Virginia had abolished the death penalty. Frank Coppola was my first one. And at that particular time, I was very nervous because it was the first one within that 20-year period. Virginia hadn't had an execution within 20 years. And I was nervous. Frank was nervous. But Frank had one thing on us. He was ready. But the state of Virginia wasn't ready. Frank decided that he would go on. He dropped all of his appeals, and he, at the time of his execution, he threw both thumbs up, said, "Bring it on," and that set the tone. And that was my first one. And from there, I did 61 more. And executions in 1999, I did my last execution. I was sentenced to a 57-month incarceration at a federal institution for a crime that I really didn't commit, but I was involved somewhat, but directly but indirectly, I received 57 months. And at that time, I decided to change my concept about execution because I knew then that I wasn't given a fair trial, and I thought maybe some of the people that I've executed weren't given a fair trial. So I say I was no greater than no one else. And at that time, I couldn't turn to nobody else but God. I couldn't turn to man because you had some people that were in the institution. They probably was against the death penalty. Some might have been for it, but I can't tell another inmate that I'm there for doing something, but I'm the executioner. You can't really tell that. I couldn't even tell my wife that. You know, I didn't want nobody to know that. That's something that you don't broadcast about being that. I wasn't proud of doing what I was doing. I wasn't, no way I enjoyed doing what I was doing. I did it for the Commonwealth. And I changed my mind. I changed my thought about being an executioner.
Mr. Givens, there are quite a few questions I want to ask you about the story that you just shared, and thank you for being so open with all of us. The first I'd like to go back to is the idea of training. You said that for the first execution, the state was not prepared. How were you prepared as an executioner? Did you participate in electrocutions or lethal injection? Or I know there are five different ways in the country that executions take place. What was your experience and what was your training?
Well, training came from one of the ex-executioners of Virginia. We went to him because he was still living, and we went to him for advice. Like I said, Virginia hadn't had an execution within that 20-year period. So the chair was bolted up. We couldn't train in the chair by using the chair. The machine itself was not working, so we had to get GE to come in, General Electric to come in, to test everything, to bring everything up to par. And it's something that you can't really, really train for, because you need a body, you know, to put in the chair to test, really test it. But we had an old test board that we used to test the machine with, and it had 24 light bulbs. And what would happen is that if one light bulb didn't light up, then we knew we didn't have enough current, 24 volts to go into to test that machine.
Does Virginia still use the electric chair, or I believe we're now using lethal injection, or do the condemned have a choice?
It's optional. Within that 15-day period, the condemned can make a choice. He can die by electrocution, or he can die by lethal injection. If he decide not to make a choice, it's automatic lethal injection.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Indie Media Live on WRIR. I'm Rebecca Ferris, and I'm talking with Jerry Givens, a board member of Virginians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty and former chief executioner for the Commonwealth of Virginia. And also, Steve Northup is here. He is the executive director of Virginians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty. Taxpayers pay for these executions. So I believe that as a taxpayer in the Commonwealth of Virginia, I have an obligation to educate myself about this issue. Do you agree with me, Steve?
Absolutely, Rebecca. I mean, one of the facts about capital punishment in general and executions in particular is that all of these actions are done in the name of the people of the Commonwealth of Virginia. So Jerry Givens may have been the chief executioner for all those years that he worked for the Department of Corrections starting in 1982. But the reality of the situation is that every time Jerry was asked to act in those instances, he was acting on behalf of all of us as citizens of the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Jerry, you said that you weren't able to share your role as executioner with anyone, even your wife. I know that historically executioners have been anonymous, but how did that affect you? How did the executions affect you in the hours and days and months after they would take place? And how did it affect you not being able to share that burden with even those closest to you?
Well, Rebecca, it's a hard thing because I worked as a correctional officer for years. I was promoted to a correctional captain within that 20-year period. And my main objective in correction is to save a life and not to take a life. So when there come time for an execution, I had to transform myself into a person that would take a life, and then in the next 2 days I had to retransform myself into a person that will save a life. So that transformation period is hard.
And 62 times you went through that. I am wondering specifically about those 15 days you've alluded to before an execution takes place. Steve, you're an attorney. You can speak to this better than I can. But isn't there a special category in our law for premeditated murder, so that premeditated murder is considered even more heinous than, let's say, a crime of passion?
Absolutely. Under Virginia law, and this is true in most states in the United States, premeditated murder is generally first-degree murder. Some forms of second-degree murder are also premeditated. That's not the case in Virginia, but that's the case in some other states.
So this idea of planning for an execution for months and years, to me, feels so premeditated. I remember I first became involved in the abolition of the death penalty in 1976 when the death penalty had just been reinstated. I was living in Florida, and the state took the Attorney General in a privately leased jet to fly to New Orleans to speak to the, I think that's the Fifth Circuit, and ask for special permission to execute John Spinkelink and on the set day. And I remember being so struck by how premeditated that murder was going to be, and how could there be a situation that is in any way more premeditated than what you had to go through, Mr. Givens, in those... Can you tell our listeners about the 15 days moving up to an execution?
Well, I try not to let anything come before me and my executions. You know, I set them as a priority thing. And I sort of stayed to myself to avoid a lot of things, you know. But that period, it can be relatively hectic. I recall when I received that 57 months, I had a grand jury hearing scheduled right on the day of the execution. So I couldn't go before a grand jury to tell them, well, I'm ready to do an execution. I don't have time to really talk to you all. I don't know whether there have been bias of the of executions or what. You know, I don't want to leave myself open. So I didn't say anything, really. And I guess by me not testifying, I guess they thought that, well, he's guilty because he didn't testify. You know, that's what I gathered from them.
In those 15 days before the execution, I understand that the condemned is brought from death row at Mecklenburg down to the death house? Yeah, how does that work, the 15 days before the execution for the condemned?
It used to be Mecklenburg, but now the death row inmates are housed at Sussex, too. Okay. Yeah. So it's 15 days prior to it, providing they don't have a court date within that period.
And then what happens during those 15 days moving up to the execution?
During those 15 days, most of the time, the lawyers is in and out trying to fight last-minute appeals, trying to find some type of loopholes within that case. The condemned is trying to get himself together because, you know, it's a countdown period. You know, each day is a day closer to his death date. And the guy, is my main objective, and my job was to try to get these guys ready for that date, you know, and it's hard to do that, you know, because I look at it, I say, well, I could die before they do. I got to get myself ready, you know, trying to get this guy ready. So I had some team members, and we will get these guys ready for the execution, you know, for the death date. And on that 15th day, the day of the execution, is this guy's last everything, his last meal, his last smoke of a cigarette, his last chance to use the restroom, to talk on the telephone, his last visit with his family, his last everything. And, you know, it give you some thought, you know, it could be our last as well, you know. So these guys, and most of the guys that I've executed, I say 99% of them, I have never had anyone to resist going to the chair or going to the gurney.
That is really astounding. I would not have expected to hear that. But I'm sure that made things easier for the execution. Is there a team, or was it just you? Or
it's a team.
How does that work?
Mm-hmm. Well, I can't really get involved in the procedures, but it's a team. It's more than myself down there.
Mm-hmm. I read that you found out that when you first started doing the death penalty, you believed that it was an effective deterrent to violent crime, but that you have since come to understand that that is not the case.
No, it's not, because when I look at what I learned is when I look at the death certificate, it has on there a homicide. And when I said to myself, a homicide, you know, did I commit a homicide? You know, I asked myself this, you know. And it gives you something to think about. Here, we as taxpayers and the people of the Commonwealth, we try to reduce each year the homicide rate in our state. But yet, when you come down to an execution, you increase it.
So on the death penalty of the executed, where it says cause of death, the word is put homicide?
Homicide.
I see. If you've just tuned in, it is 9 minutes before the hour. I'm sorry. Yes, 9 minutes before the hour. I'm Rebecca Ferris. I'm the host of Indie Media Live, and I'm talking today with two of the board members of Virginians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty. And Steve Northup is here, the executive director, as well as Jerry Givens, board member and former chief executioner from 1982 to 1999 for the Commonwealth of Virginia. Mr. Givens, last year, and really every year, and Steve and I have done several shows on this, the General Assembly introduces legislation is introduced in the General Assembly, I should put it that way, to expand the crimes that would be called capital murder, that would make people convicted of those crimes eligible for the death penalty. The effort is still there every year to expand the death penalty. And I know that you went last year and testified. Could you tell us how you feel about those efforts to expand the death penalty and how you feel about the legislators and the court system in general as part of this whole scenario?
Well, Rebecca, I look at it this way. At the 62 people that I've executed, I'm not trying to see how many people, or I wasn't trying to see how many people I could actually kill. I'm trying to avoid killing people. And Virginia should be trying to avoid to kill people. Try to make every means and efforts to cut back crimes, to cut crimes out, instead of trying to increase things that will give people the death penalty. Why can't we be reversed and trying to increase things not to give people the death penalty, trying to cut the death penalty out? You know, it's not something that I enjoy. Like I said once in my interview, if the judge, if the people on the jury had to be the executioner, I don't think they would recommend the death penalty for a lot of people. I think they would give it a second thought.
If the legislators had to be in the shoes of the executioner, I wonder if they would give a second thought as well.
No, and I think if their children were sent to be executed, I don't think their kids would want their kids to be executed. You know, it's somebody's child. And I realize it's somebody's child that were killed. But we can't take the eye for eye anymore.
I would like to, and I appreciate you for that. I appreciate that segue, Mr. Givens, because, Steve, I want to make sure that we talk, when we're having the conversation about abolition of the death penalty, that we talk about the victims of these crimes that have been committed that led these people to death row. I know that there have been more than 100 people across the country exonerated from death row because they're innocent, but we know that there are crimes that have been committed, murders that have been committed, and people are executed for having committed those murders. So I would like to just take a minute and acknowledge the victims of these crimes.
Thank you, Rebecca, for that segue, because this raises a very important point that we emphasize continuously at VADP. We can't ever forget the victims of violent crime. These are all sad stories. On the few occasions when there have been, the relatively few occasions, although it's more than 100 nationwide, when there have been exonerations from death row because of innocence, that's not really a victory. What we've accomplished in those situations is we have avoided adding yet additional deaths to the losses. So for that reason, we're glad, but we don't ever rejoice when that happens, because as long as there are victims of violent crimes, we feel strongly for the victims, for the family members of the victims, because they are suffering greatly. What we advocate is that we should not be adding yet additional victims to these situations and expanding the pain beyond the pain being experienced by the family members of the victims of the crime in the first place.
Virginia has the second busiest death house in the United States, and your organization, Virginians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty, has a website that will help listeners, if they're interested, to find out more about these issues, to keep up with what's going on, and that is vadp.org. VADP, Virginians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty.org. And there's also an 888 number, 888-567-VADP. That's 8237.
And that's, thank you for that, Rebecca. And I want to add one more thing. We are now on Facebook.
Wow.
So if you are on Facebook, go search for Virginians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty, and you will be linked immediately to our page, which is a very active page, by the way. We get lots of hits, lots of comments. A lot of our supporters, especially our younger ones, are using Facebook, and they are connecting with us through Facebook.
And I know that has a lot to do with all of Mr. Givens' efforts to help educate the public about this issue. I wonder, what are the alternatives to the death penalty? That is in your name, Virginians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty. Are there alternatives to the death penalty in Virginia, Mr. Givens?
Yes. I say this, Rebecca. I learned this. If we as people learn to love ourselves and love God and love others, then chances are we wouldn't have the murders, that we wouldn't have these types of crimes, you know, because if you love yourself, you wouldn't hurt yourself. If you love others, you wouldn't hurt others. And if you love God, you wouldn't hurt anyone. But where there's no love in your heart, there's no God in your life. And we all need God in our lives. Not just because God shook up the earth the other day, we go to God, or let Hurricane Irene come down and then go to God. Just go to God every day. When you wake up in the morning, go to God. And when you do that, I don't think you would have time to think about taking alive the life of another person. But to the condemned people and the victims that lost their lives, another day is not promised to none of us. When we wake up in the morning, you should thank God first. You don't know what that day gonna bring. Like those victims, they didn't know they were gonna be killed that day. But I hope in each and every one of them had prepared themselves for the next journey. And that's what I say to all your listeners. Prepare yourself for the next journey.
Thank you, Mr. Givens. We have 1 minute left. And Steve, I'm wondering, we just had an execution recently, Jerry Terrell Jackson, I think, for the murder of Ruth Phillips. I think that Mr. Givens' point about love in our lives is really important in Terrell Jackson's case because of his childhood.
It was a horrible childhood, Rebecca, and one of the things that we learned when we learned about his case is that he was terribly abused as a youngster, and unfortunately this was information the sentencing jury never heard, and so they never had that opportunity to be able to at least understand Mr. Jackson as a human and see him as a human being rather than as a monster.
And with the sentence in Virginia of life without the possibility of parole. Well, I thank you both so much for all your work, and I thank you for being here today. I want to remind everybody that every year, more than 10 billion domesticated land animals are slaughtered for food in the United States. 30 million every day, 20,000 every minute, 2,000 every second animals are killed for food. They love their lives in their own ways as much as you and I do, and they've committed no crime. They are wholly innocent of any offense. Can you find a way in your own heart to reduce or stop your participation in their slaughter? Can you widen your circle of compassion to include their precious lives? On behalf of all the great volunteers at WRIR who make Indie Media Live possible, thank you for listening. Until next week, when my guest will be Dawn Moncrief, the executive director of A Well-Fed World, be kind to yourselves, be kind to each other and to the animals and to the planet, but don't be silent, because silence is the voice of complicity. We wish you peace.